You're listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast forged by Rogues. Each week, we design new decks for tournament play, and then we put our creations to the test so we can share our findings on the air. What worked? What didn't? And what can we improve for the following weeks? On today's episode, Anthony, better known as I Play Bad Decks, gets shot by more as they look into some of their craziest brews for the past few days, going from Mono White Mirror into the depths of Esper Micromancer. Will any of these decks have any success? Will any of them actually be of interest? Join us to find out and hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to Faithless Brewing. Tonight, our beautiful CEO sadly could not join us and make the great intro he tends to do. However, I came and found the best replacement Manny could ever find. One of the best brewers in Modern, clearly the most chaotic one. I Play Bad Decks. Beautiful Ant, how are you doing?
Oh, that was a very nice intro. I'm doing good. It's been an interesting couple weeks of, you know, spoilers and brewing and all that stuff and ideas coming to mind. So I'm looking forward to, you know, going over what I've been working on and maybe talk about some other fun cards that maybe we can try to break.
Seems perfect. So yesterday I contacted Ant, got him so we could record for today. And the first thing I said to him is, let's get your finest brews, but let's get your good brews.
The good being the key word, because there's a lot of garbage that, you know, goes into any deck that you brew, right? You're going to have like the first draft and it's going to be terrible. Then you're going to have the second draft and it's going to be less terrible. And then by the 18th draft, you have a deck that can possibly go 3-2 in a modern league and then you're good to go. Just don't burn all your play points like me.
Yeah. So he makes the good work so you don't lose play points going 0-2, drop consistently with things that are completely unplayable. So he's the one that provides mostly me with half-furnished idea that then we work on, but he's the one that makes this the blind testing on bad ideas.
You guys can all send me, you know, all your the DMs thanking me. That's okay. I'm a humble person.
You can both thank him in the DMs and offer him bad ideas, and you can make him waste more play points. If you send him an interesting bad idea, he's going to waste his play points on it.
It's 100% I will. If you give me like a fun card, I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Five leagues of this 0-2 dropping.
How many leagues of 0-2 drop have you had with Seance? I think that was the one you bested the most on.
I don't think I O2'd that much with Seance. I usually would like 2-3 or 3-2 with it somehow. Because like every once in a while you run into like the burn deck that just can't beat like a recurring Siege Rhino or something.
Okay, yeah. It was bound to get you some wins. Like it wasn't completely playable.
Yeah. No. The synergies were really strong. Just
it's likely the deck you spent the most leagues on, I think.
Yeah, for a while I was jamming that free. I got a 4-1 with it once or twice, but like nobody's 5-0'd with Seance yet, so hopefully one day I can be the first one.
So finally, got together a few deck lists that should be at least decent, ranging from decent to good actually, because I really like some of them. And before we jump right into some of Anthony's brews, some of the last things we have been doing in Faithless Brewing, we have a few spoilers that we missed on the last week because they were released 2 days ago, I think.
Yeah.
The Mishra Meld card. So we got the Ursa Planeswalker card, and now we have Mishra claimed by Geeks.
Yeah, they're pretty interesting cards. And honestly, anytime I see a card with like more text than there are words in a book, I get like, I'm like, that's too much for me to read. But, you know, I think both cards are fairly strong by themselves, like the Dragon Engine and Mishra. Now, I'm not sure like whether it's for Pioneer or Modern if they're strong by themselves, but like, I'm probably more intrigued by just the Dragon Engine by itself.
Okay, so let's read the card before everybody gets into chaos. First, we have Mishra claimed by Geeks, a 4-mana 3/5 legendary creature, Phyrex and Human Artificer. Remember, everybody, a lot of cards have been errated into having the Phyrex at tagline. All infect creatures. A lot of the angels are Phyrexian as well, like Atraxa and Chancellor of the Annex are all Phyrexian now as well, so it's now a pretty common type. And it reads, whenever you attack, each opponent loses X life and you gain X life, where X is the number of attacking creatures. If Mishra attacks with a creature named Phyrexian Dragon Engine, and you both own and control them, exile them and meld them into Mishra lost to Phyrexia. And it enters the battlefield tapped and attacking. We are going to get back into that. And then we have the maybe playable in modern card.
Yeah, which is Phyrexian Dragon Engine, which is a 3-mana artifact creature, Phyrexian Dragon. It has double strike. It's 2/2. When it enters the battlefield from your graveyard, which is the key part here, not just enter the battlefield, it has to enter from your graveyard. You may discard your hand if you do draw 3 cards. So it has like the Ox of Agonis effect stapled on it, except when it comes out of the graveyard. So obviously when you have both of those out, you know, you can meld them into Mishra Lost to Phyrexia.
Super importantly, also on the Phyrexian Dragon Engine, it has an Earth.
Yeah.
So you can get into play attacking and it melts immediately. So this is the Phyrexian Dragon Engine is like an inverse Ox of Agonis. Like it has instead of 2 and 4, instead of 2 and 5, it's 3 and 5, like it's more from the graveyard. Because it doesn't have scape or anything, you just unearth it and you get a 2/2 double striker with haste and draw 3 cards.
Yeah. It's obviously not gonna be good in the shells that Ox is in, because Ox being 2 mana to, you know, bring exactly. back. But I think it could be in some other shells.
So in the shells that could be interesting, I think. Okay, we can talk about that after we go to the Mishra Lost to Phyrexia. So let's say you get these 2 creatures on the board and you get them attacking. You then transform them both into Mishra Lost to Phyrexia. A 9/9 that will enter the battlefield attacking, that whenever it enters the battlefield or attacks, just in case for everybody to be sure, this only triggers once, like in that turn, because it enters the battlefield, but it didn't trigger the attack one, it just triggers the enter the battlefield one, because it enters already attacking. You choose 3 options out of 6. Target opponent discards 2 cards, bolt any target, destroy target artifact or planeswalker, creatures you control gain manas and trample until end of turn, creatures you don't control get -1/-1, and create 2 top Power Stone tokens. So this is, the moment it flips, this is like an immediate 4/4/1, right? Get a 9/9, bolt, destroy something, opponent discards 2, or give it trample for lethal because it's a 9/9.
It's pretty much like, it's hard to imagine on a fairly equal board state that this card doesn't just win you the game. Even if they find a way to kill it, you're still like, just, you're so far ahead on whatever, whether it's against a control deck, you make them, you know, you mind rot them or whatever. I think, I'm not sure if it's playable in modern, like the two together, it might be a little too slow. Plus there's like solitudes and stuff like that just might get around it. But it is, it's hard to say, like, it's not, you know, insanely powerful if you can find a way to get it to stick.
Yeah, the biggest problem is Mishra being almost a 4-mana vanilla 3/5 on Rakdos, right?
Yeah. Which is not what those colors generally like to do.
Exactly. The Phyrexian Dragon Engine, though, immediately after you got spoiled, Beautiful Brewer, Aspiring Spike immediately said, I know I'm a Goblin Engineer addict, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's perfect for Goblin Engine. And when I saw that tweet, I was just like, yeah, that's perfect. Because like sometimes, and like especially in Modern, and with Goblin Engineer, you are only usually putting like 1 card that you really want in there. Whether it's like Parhelion in the Greasefang decks, or maybe like, you know, Grinding Station if you're playing it. Like, normally you're only playing it in Modern to find like 1 key card, and then most copies after that don't feel as good when you draw it, in my experience at least.
Yeah.
I think with the Phyrexian Dragon Engine, it's great because it makes your Goblin Engineers later turn into like card advantage almost, where if you top deck an engineer, you can like search for the Dragon Engine, put it in, unearth, draw 3 cards. That seems fairly strong just to have as a one of, and like by itself a 3-mana 2/2 double strike.
It's bad, but it isn't completely unplayable.
Yeah, it's not the worst thing ever. Like, I'm definitely gonna test one in the Greasefang list that I played a while, just because I think it's free. And
I think it having an earth on its own, like, you get a lot of the things you get with Engineer, like the, what's the name of the egg? Ichor Wellspring.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Are amazing value-wise, but the problem is, Engineer tends to die, and you just did nothing. However, if the Engineer got this into the graveyard, it's almost like ETB, it drew you a card, right?
Yep.
Because now you have a 5-mana choo-choo that draws you 3, that has a Season Pyromancer trigger, just draws you 3 cards and discards your hand. So that's actually a pretty great interaction. Also with Unearth.
Yeah, and most Engineer deck, I feel like you're normally not chock full of cards in your hand. Your curve is usually pretty low.
Yeah.
You're playing like an Asmo shell, so you're discarding cards and all that stuff. So like this just being able to draw 3 in most decks that lack card advantage, I think people are going to mess around with it, and I think it's going to be cool. I'm not sure if it's going to be like absurd, but I think it's going to be good enough to see play in Modern in those type of shells.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like it. And I think it's any sort of Mishra lost to Phyrexia, like the Melkar Seas play, it's going to be 100% on the back of Phyrexia and Dragon Engine being pretty good.
Yes. Yeah.
And Mishra claimed by Geeks just added as a one-off for fun, and you getting to transform.
If it was three mana, if Mishra was three mana and it could also be unearthed, then I would think like you could actually probably get away with playing one or two in like a weird engineer type shell.
Yeah, Rakdos with four unearthed in the main deck, Academy Manufacturers, just getting a greased, getting a lot of good three drops with your unearthed.
Because then you're looking at like a, you know,
critical mass of great three drops.
Yeah, and turn four, and you know, you could cheese out like a Mishra lost to, yeah, that could be pretty good. But unfortunately, four mana might be a bit too much for modern purposes, but I think the Dragon Engine's good.
Both of them have been made in a manner like this and Ursa, where you can flip them on curve. Like Ursa costs three, and it reduces the cost of the other part to four. And then that one taps for two mana, so you can pay the seven with your fifth land drop. And this one is the same. It's a turn three creature without haste into a turn four creature without haste. However, as the three drop has haste, if it dies, you can unearth it, get it back, and on turn five flip.
Yeah, yeah. They built it nicely that it can't be like abused. I mean, like I'm sure there's still going to be like maybe in Standard or Pioneer, which I don't really
care. Yeah.
You know, there could be ways that it's better because it's a little bit slower format. And Modern, you know, if you're just going like turn three, turn four, turn five, hope these both live to attack you, you know.
So if they leave, you're getting comboed, and if you're not getting comboed, they're gonna die. So the only way they survive is if you don't.
Yeah, I think that's why the Dragon Engine, because even if it dies, you bring it back. You know, I think that's probably the most playable.
Exactly. So with that being said, two of the new spoilers, hope more to come in a few days. I think it's 2 weeks till they start releasing them. Why don't you just fire up on your first brew of the day?
So what I've been working on the past, probably like this past week, was, you know, when Sarah Paragon came out, I was just like, man, like, I never liked Lurrus because I thought the card was overpowered, and I don't like playing with those cards. If you don't know already, Ragavan, Ren, and Six can all eat it. Same with Yorion.
No. See, you always have to step out of your line.
Gotta take a couple jabs at the dumb flying noodle bird fish thing.
You know the first 5-0 with your decklist is going to be mine with Iorion, right?
I'm going to be very sad. But, so I was trying to think of shells. I'm like, okay, like, what can be, like, I've seen people mess around with it and, like, Devoted Druid as a one-of, just for, like, incremental value and stuff like that. And I think it's, you know, probably fine. But I was like, what can I jam four in and just be, like, the super grindy pile? Because I think in Modern right now, like, you either have to be, like, super fast to get under, like, you know, a creativity or type deck or whatever. Or you got to be like super grindy and can like just like hang on and outgrind these decks. And it's really hard to do in a format with Yorion, Omnath, Renin 6, Expressive Iterations. Like it's really hard to outgrind these decks if you're not also playing those cards. And I refuse to play those cards. So it's always a challenge of mine. I'm like, how can I do that if I'm not playing, you know, something fast or a combo? Yes.
So Ant everybody plays with his own deck list of banned cards. So he has his own deck list, and opponents do not respect it.
Something about like those cards, like it's not as challenging to win with those cards. Not that like people who play them aren't good; obviously they are. But it's just not as fulfilling to me to win with them because everybody wins with them. It's hard not to win with them. So this build was like a take on Martyr Proc, which was a deck, probably one of the early modern decks. You know, I don't remember exactly what date, but it was a thing when I started playing Modern. It was using Martyr of Sands and Proclamation Rebirth to rebuy your Saracenants and your Martyrs and create this really grindy, you know, I was playing Ranger of Eos to grab 2/1 drops. It was really hard once the deck's engine got going to kind of keep up with it because they're gaining 6 life a turn with, you know, proccing a Martyr. They're playing Squadron Hawks, which can chump for a while. They play, you know, so I kind of took that shell and I just jammed. You know, I said, how can I make this grindier? Because right now, you know, the older versions probably weren't as much. I took the core of, you know, kept it with Sarah Ascendant, Martyr, Squadron Hawks. I'm not playing any Ranger of Eos, the 4 drops, just because I'm playing Sarah Paragon in that spot. So I'm playing Ranger Captain, which is really, really good. It's great versus Cascade if you can play it on curve and they don't have like a subtlety or something for it. Or I guess, you know, for Rhino's sake, a Leyline Binding. You know, that still can grab your Saracen and your Kami of False Hope, the one of Thraben Inspector to get you a little card advantage later in the game if needed. So then, and then comes to like kind of like the off, not off the wall, because these cards are not off the wall, but like a little different than normal Martyr is a Stoneforge, which sees play in some lists, but some like don't play it in favor of, you know.
How has Stoneforge been?
It's been fine. It's like another threat that you got to answer because some, you know, damage removal decks can't really deal with Cauldra. I don't know if I were to cut it, what I'd play instead, because I think plus it's really good with Sarah Paragon. You know, you play Sarah Paragon, you rebuy your Stoneforge, then like, you know, that's happened quite a lot. So it's been pretty good. And you're playing the equipment package of Sword of Fire, Ice, Batterskull, and Cauldra. So, and then in the enchantments, I'm on 4 on Thin Ice. I go back and forth if that should be like March or Solitudes, but on Thin Ice just being another one drop to take care of like a Ragavan on the draw, I found has been pretty good. Plus it deals with Murktide really efficiently. So I've been pretty happy with it. And then 4 Abiding Grace, which is like Proclamation of Rebirth on steroids. It's 3 mana enchantment. Either you gain at the end step, you either gain 1 life, which don't underestimate that. I've used that quite a lot. Or you return target creature card with mana value 1 from your graveyard to the battlefield. So you're rebuying Sarah Ascendant every turn. My Murktide opponent went through all 4 Unholy Heats every single game, and I must have had like 20 Sarah Ascendants come into play. They just like kept, you know, they EE'd me a bunch and all this stuff, and it just like didn't matter.
They kept removing them, and they just kept like, coming.
Game
back.
1, Murktide can't beat a resolved Abiding Grace. It's just they don't have EE to get rid of it. They have Odawara to bounce and then counter it, but like, yeah, they have to find their 1 of Odawara. I don't know. Anytime my Murktide record's 6-1 right now. And Abiding Grace has just been insane. Like, if you could protect it with a Ranger Captain, and then you just start. Plus, like, you get to Call Me of False Hope, people. So, Call Me of False Hope, for those of you guys who don't know, is a Kamigawa card from that block. It's a 1/1 spirit for a white. It's, when you sacrifice it, you prevent all combat damage that would be dealt this turn. So, with Abiding Grace, you sack it on their turn, on your, you know. They don't do any damage to you. On your turn, you get it back, and you just rinse and repeat if they can't find a way. So against, like, Hammer can't...
It's a good Sporty Frog loop from back in the day.
Yeah, Hammer can't beat Kami. Just like, at least game 1, I'm, like, 99% sure they don't... Most lists, I should say, don't play any, like, Marches, main board, or anything like that. So they just can't beat you doing that. And that, you know, if you know once you see her against Hammer, if you have a Ranger Captain, 99% of the time, I'm just getting Kami right away and just hoping I can find an Abiding Grace. So basically what the deck is trying to do, it plays some really grindy elements, right? You have the ability to make a turn 2 6/6 lifelink flying with Sarah Senen and Martyr. You have Squadron Hawks it's basically a card advantage card, right? It's most of the time you're drawing 3 cards and they're all Squadron Hawk.
So Squadron Hawk makes getting something like Sword of Fire and Ice a lot better with your Stoneforge because it almost guarantees you having a decent creature.
Yeah, and nobody, and like people, it feels really bad to bolt a Squadron Hawk because you're just like, oh, he's just going to play another one. I just waste, you know, like that never feels good. And it feels great if you're the one playing Squadron Hawk. Like I've gotten a bunch of Squadron Hawks bolted in Unholy Heated this week, and I'm like, oh, that's great, I have another one. But at the end of the day with this deck, your grind, what you want to be doing is Sarah Paragon and Abiding Grace, like in terms of your permanence. Like that's just a lot of value that like later in the game, after they burn their removal on Sarah Ascendant and Ranger Captain and Stoneforge Mystic and all that stuff, and you kind of grinded them out of their removal. Like I can't tell you how many times I played against Shadow or Murktide. And I sent Mort a screenshot today of me playing against Shadow, and they had like 4 Unholy Heats, 3 Drowns, Terminate, 2 Kolaghan's Commands, you know, 3 counter spells, blah blah blah, all in their 2 Fatal Pushes in their graveyard, and I was at like 40 life, and they were at like 3, and it didn't even matter that, you know, they did that, because like once you get the engine going, it's so hard to disrupt, especially game 1. You know, I think it gives you a good chance against most really fair decks in the format, the Murktides of the world, Shadow. Even Hammer. And then, you know, you also get like the long, long term backup plan in the mana base of playing like 1 Emeria, the Sky Ruin, which if you get that online against any grindy deck, probably impossible to lose if you just start rebuying Ranger Captains and Sarah Paragons. You're just like, oh yeah, you're not beating this. So like what I found the good matchups are, like in the main board wise, like Murktide felt pretty good. Shadow, like any creature based deck that revolves around doing combat damage, it has been you know, really, really good affinities of Breeze. You know, the decks where you want to kind of avoid are combo, like creativity has been rough just because like they don't care about.
Yeah, combo I think just goes over you.
Yeah, I mean, like you have four Ranger Captains in the main board, which can like maybe buy you some time again. Like I haven't played against Living End or Rhinos yet this whole week. I don't know what's going on. I played against like, you know, a bunch of Murktide, a bunch of creativity, Merfolk, this, that, and the other Hammer. So I'm still kind of, the jury's out to see how it would do. Having four Ranger Captains is like not terrible. Plus, like Living End, you could just try to gain a bunch of life early, get Martyrs in the graveyard and stuff like that. And then just kind of like a 6-6 Saracen, it's basically better than anything they could put into play besides the 7-7 thing that's escaping me, the name I forget. So maybe Living End game one might not be like horrendous. It's probably not great. But yeah, you want to avoid combo if you had the choice. But otherwise, like the main board's been pretty great. I've changed a few numbers here and there talking to Mord about it. Yeah, I don't know. Outside of like, you know, Mord's favorite thing is Yorinizing all the decks I sent him. I'm not sure what I would change outside of maybe trying like Solitude.
It's a fun hobby.
Yeah, yeah.
So what about Solitude and Sunscour?
Sunscour is the like pitch two white cards, right?
Yeah.
It's been a while. I like remember seeing it. It's from Cold Snap. Yeah. Destroy all creatures you may exile to. I mean, like, that's not bad with Squadron Hawk. I just don't know. Like, again, your creature matchups are already good. So it's like.
Okay. Yeah. It makes sense. You can just lock them out.
Yeah. Like, Solitude, I could see over Onthonice just because, like, it's an instant, which sometimes comes up a bit more. The kind of. Somewhat good thing about Onthonice is like you can buy him back with Sarah Paragon, which has come up once or twice. Like somebody like made me discard it, and later in the game I was able to, you know, have one mana open after I cast Sarah Paragon and then bring it back. Like that's felt pretty good.
What I'm surprised of is Zero Marches. Like, have you been fine with only four removal spells?
Yeah, I mean, like I gained so much life that like again the creature.
You can afford a beatdown.
Yeah, like, when I see, like, Murktide, unless, like, Murktide has the starts of, like, you know, on the play, they go, like, Ragavan into Bolt Your Dude, you know, turn, you know, and then turn three Murktide, and then you're under, like, so much pressure, and they have a counterspell to back it up. That's really the only way I found myself, like, losing to Murktide. I, like, today when I played, like, they had a 8-9 Ledger Shredder, an 8-8 Murktide, and then, and like, I still crush them. Like they they were doing all this stuff, but like, you know, I had like six cards in my hand. I had Abiding Grace going. They kept having to kill everything I played and it just came back and all that stuff. Like they were just, I put so much pressure on them early. I think I got like a turn two Sarah sending out and they took a while to find Delirium. And then like in the sideboard, which is probably like the biggest thing, which I go back and forth on, I'm playing two more targets for Ranger Captain, one Burrington Forge Tender, which is just, you know, good against Ragavan decks, burn, just like a fine tutor target, saves your like Stone Forge from removal against those decks, which is pretty nice. And then one Giant Killer, which again can take can take care of like a Murktide and Archon.
I'm surprised by no Cathar Commando.
So I was playing Cathar over the Seal of Cleansings, but I realized like if I'm on the draw, I'd rather have a 2-mana answer than a 3-mana answer.
Yeah, and you can also just get back the seal with Serra, so it's not like you're losing on any synergies.
Yeah, the value's still there with Serra Paragon, which is great. Plus, like,
it's a tiny bit less of value because you cannot keep it rebuying it.
Yeah, I would say that seal, I think, is better against, like, a Breach-style deck that plays removal, because it would feel really bad if you went, like, turn two flashing Cathar Commando and they were like, all right, bolt it before you get a chance to activate it. Then they go like untap, breach, kill you. Where with Seal of Cleansing, you could just stick it on turn two and let it sit there until they find a way to deal with it. So I've kind of like, that's come up once where I'm like, yes, I think I, at one point I had a 2-1 split, but I like overall, like Seal of Cleansing just sticking on the battlefield has been a bit better. It's obviously worse against Pithing Needle effects because they'll see it coming if you don't use it right away. But like that,
yeah, of course,
that hasn't come up too much. And then I'm playing three Hallowed Moonlight, which is, you know, really good against creativity, really good against Living End, good against Rhinos, good against Yawgmoth. It's got a lot of, I think it's, you know, finally people are starting to catch on, but it's super, super good right now.
Super powerful card.
I got two Ruined Halo, which I'm testing out because I realized, like, I'm pretty
Malakut?
Yeah, pretty bad against, like, I got smashed one of my losses today against Red Green Scapeshift, I felt like I could do nothing. Like, I put some early pressure on them, and then they just, like, tightened me, and I'm like, well, that was fun.
Sadly, I think that still happens even if you have, like, if you still have the Rune Hallowed, you're just going to consistently clear your board. Like, I don't know if...
Yeah, it could be something else. I mean, it's also good against creativity because you name Archon, and then it stops their trigger, which could be relevant.
Oh, yeah, that's actually the most relevant. That's actually the good part about the Archon, not the 6-6.
Yeah, especially... Yeah, I mean, like, you just play Ruined Halo on Archon, and if they're on, like, the non-green piles and they can't remove it, like, they literally can't deal damage with Archon because they can't target you, they can't... It might have value against some other, like, random decks, like, that rely on, like, maybe one or two big things. I don't know. It's a test spot.
So, some beautiful 4-1s with Martyr Grind.
Yeah, so, and then the one of that I'm testing, that I'm going to test, is God Eternal Alketra. And some judge may have to correct me, because I literally just threw it in my sideboard. I haven't tested it yet. It reads, when it dies or is put into exile from the battlefield. So, and technically, this can get around Leyline Binding, because Leyline Binding exiles it, which would cause God Eternal Alketra to go third from the top. So you just...
You just always send it to the third spot.
Yeah, so, like, it's really hard for those decks to get rid of. Plus, like, you know, it's really good with Squadron Hawk and stuff like that, because you're just, like, you hold your Squadron Hawks in your hand, you play Ketra, and then they turn into 4-4 zombies. They make 4-4 zombies. So in theory, it should be good. It might be good against, like, the grindier decks that you might have struggle with, like the Yorion Ren decks and all that stuff. Like, this could be, like, one of, like, a bomb that you could play, and you're just like, oh, like, now I can get far ahead again. But yeah, the deck's been really good. I'm excited to keep playing with it. I think if the meta shifts more, like, if creativity gets knocked down a peg somehow, and the meta shifts more towards, like, the hammer strategies, Murktide, Shadow, all that stuff, I think this is a really good list to play, because you can outgrind those decks even through all the iterations of the world and stuff like that. If the meta favors Living End, Rhinos, creativity, and that's kind of what a lot of it is, then, you know, this deck is not going to do as good. So, and just don't put Yorion in it, and you'll be good.
For now. Eventually, I might just Yorionize this, because I love Serra Paragon, and I'm looking for any excuse to play that card.
Yeah. Should we go on to the next one?
Yeah, let's go. So we have what we know as Waste Shieldred, which should tell you 99% of what the deck is.
Yeah, so, and I got to give a shout out to Dylan Cruz MTG, who's a huge Waste Knot guy. He's like the Waste Knot guy. He posts wacky Waste Knot brews all the time on Twitter. But I remember probably like a year or so ago, I was talking to this guy, and I don't have him added anymore. I lost his contact or whatever. But he was playing a Waste Knot build with Dreadhorde Arcanist, which is, you know, I thought was really cool at the time. And I found the list and I looked at it. So I kind of tweaked it from there. Newer cards and this and that. So basically, you have a couple combos, I guess, in the deck. Number one is Waste Knot, which, if you don't know, is really good with discard outlets. When you make them, it's an enchantment. When your opponent discards a creature, you get to put a 2/2 zombie. When they discard a land, you add 2 black. And when they discard a non-creature, non-land, you draw a card. So with effects like Thoughtseize and Inquisition, it turns into like card advantage for you. Whether you're going to make a zombie or draw a card, like it's like a pretty solid effect. Where it gets broken is when you add in cards like Burning Inquiry, which is each player draws 3 cards, then discards 3 cards. So, you know, a lot of times you could play like Waste Knot on turn 2, Inquiry on turn 3. And you could end up making like 2 zombies, drawing a card, having some mana floating, play a Shieldred or something like that. Like, the, you know, there's endless possibilities of how either great it could go or poorly, right? You could make them discard 3 lands and you discard all your spells and you're sitting there like, oh, that was great. So there's a bit of variance to it. But you are playing. So that's the combo, really. Burning Inquiry and Waste Knot. That's what the deck is trying to achieve. Now, in order to kind of protect that or survive until then, you're playing the classic like black-red shell of 4 Inquisition, 4 Thoughtseize, 4 Bolt, 4 Fatal Push, 4 Terminate. So you got 12 removal spells, which I'm always...
This might be the most interaction I've ever seen you play.
Well, like... I hate, like, my thing is, like, I hate being attacked by Ragavan. So I got to have at least... I have to have 8 removal... If I'm playing a deck, like, with bolts and stuff, I'm playing 8 of them minimum. Like one drop, because like if I get hit by a Ragavan, I lose my mind.
So you have 12 removals, 8 discards. That's a lot of interaction.
Yeah, and then, you know, you're playing 4 Profane Tutor, which we'll get to in a second, and then 1 Kolaghan's Command as like the one of in the deck, because it's a discard outlet. It can rebuy your things. You know, the Shatter effect, always you're going to find yourself being like, oh, thank God. And then so the creatures, we're playing four Dreadhorde Arcanist, which is a super, super powerful card, banned in Legacy. Obviously not as powerful in Modern, but in the right shell, if you get to untap with it, you feel pretty far ahead because you're playing so many one drops. Like,
okay.
The best play that I've done with it, I think, is like Inquisition, take your removal spell, you know, play Arcanist. They don't, let's say they just play land, go attack with Arcanist, flashback Inquisition, you know, something like that. Like, that feels so good. Also against creature decks, like, I think I played against Elves and I like bolted their turn one play, played turn two Arcanist, and they just conceded.
Arcanist is insane against non-interactive opponents.
Yeah. You just bury them, and like, that's what it felt like for people that have played against it before. Like, if you can't deal with it right away, it's miserable. Because you're just like, in this deck, there's no cards that really draw, there's no, you know, Serum Visions or something to flashback of that nature. But just like flashing back Bolts, Fatal Push, Inquisition. Where it gets spicy is Profane Tutor with Dreadhorde Arcanist. So,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so, you know, it comes up every now and then where you either, you know, play an Arcanist and, you know, your Profane Tutor's in the graveyard from like a Burning Inquiry, then you attack with Arcanist, flashback Profane Tutor, and that becomes free Demonic Tutor, essentially, which is really good. Maybe you go get another Waste Knot, a Burning Inquiry, a removal spell. So it's pretty powerful. Plus, it lets you find like your Waste Knots and your Burning Inquiries, whatever piece you're missing, because normally you'll have one in hand. So it allows you to find the last piece to kind of do your thing. And then the last spicy part is the Shieldred, the Apocalypse, which is like the Pioneer All-Star of the world. Everybody loves this card, and it's super cool. 4/5 Death Touch for 4. Whenever you draw a card, you gain 2. Whenever an opponent draws a card, they lose 2. So with Burning Inquiry and Shieldred out, it becomes double Lightning Bolt them, double Healing Salvu, you know, drain them for 6, you gain 6, which is super powerful. And it's a way to plus, like, decks that can't remove this, if, like, you grinded them out with some removal and you slam this and, like, they're like, oh, crap. Like, it's just going to put in so much work every turn. I think it's underexplored in Modern, this card. I'm not sure if this is the best shell for it, but I think...
In Modern, it's a bit tougher than in Pioneer, yes. Because this is one of my biggest complaints in Pioneer, is how less efficient the removal is than the threats. In Modern, it's the other way around, yes. Right?
No. Playing
Shield already in 2, but you're playing a lot of this card to enable Shield.
Yes, right? Yeah. And I think, like, if you want to play Shieldred, you either have to play deck with a lot of discard to protect it, and hopefully, like, it survives a couple turns. Or like some type of deck that it's a control deck with counter spells or something. But in this deck, I think it does pretty good as a top end. Yeah. End the game, you know, I'm going to slam this. You play Burning Inquiry. Or like, I think the one time I turned like 3'd this by like, you know, Burning Inquiry, make some mana. And I think I had like a red floating, had another Inquiry. And it was just like so strong that I'm like I was so happy. I think the first time I took this list through a league, I went 4-1. I lost out on the 5-0. To a really close match against Creativity. I don't know if this is the best version of it, if like the numbers should be changed, if I'm playing too many removal, this, that, and the other. It's just kind of my deck building philosophy with these decks is to play like 4 ofs of all your removal. I just don't like getting attacked by things. Yeah, the deck is pretty consistent at what it tries to do. The question is just like, is the variance going to be on your side? A lot of the times, like, I Burning Inquiried and won the game because I turned one Inquiried when I had nothing else to do. And there's sometimes where you, like, turn 2, turn 3 Inquiry with Waste Knot, you get really unlucky hits, you discard your gas, and you're just sitting there like, okay, that sucked. You know, more times than not, it's going to work out in your favor. And then the sideboard, and we're playing, a pretty standard black-red mana base. In the sideboard, we got some other fun stuff. Like, so I realized I was playing, like, Unlicensed Hearse in the first... Like when I was testing the deck.
Yeah, in the first brews.
Or like other random graveyard hate Dothies and stuff like that. But then I'm like, I just want Leyline. Because against like decks like Murktide, you don't want to be fueling their graveyard with Burning Inquiry so they can turn to a Murktide and you're just like, oh, good God. So Leyline just becomes really, really good, making them discard, especially. And it also has great value against not only Murktide, but Living End and all those fun graveyard decks, Breach, so on and so forth. So. Playing 4 Leyline, 2 Kolaghan's Command in the sideboard for the Hammer matchup, 3 Hitasugo Consumes All, again for Hammer or other, you know, low to the ground elf strategies, 2 Turok, super good against the Solitude Leyline binding decks running around. It's also great with Waste Knot. You know, you make them discard 2 cards at random, you get, you know, a card and a zombie for it, and you got a 4/3. Like, that feels pretty good. Plus, like, you can ramp this, you can kind of ramp into this a little earlier with Waste Knot, depending. If they discard some lands. And then 2 Blood Moons in the sideboard. Blood Moon just super, super good right now with all the domain strategies running around that.
Yeah, I'm surprised you don't have any Blood Moon in the main deck.
I did have one Blood Moon to tutor for with Profane Tutor, but I put it in for Kolaghan's Command, which I could see, you know, taking out the Kolaghan's Command and playing the one of Blood Moon tutor for. But again, I like removal spells, and I feel like, you know, Kolaghan's Command's pretty good right now as well, which could just be me. But overall, like, I'll probably test a bit more with this deck because Dreadhorde Arcanist is one of my favorite cards. And like just untapping with it, there's a few better feelings in Magic. This is probably like a top 10 for me. Like, you know, untapping okay. and being like, oh yes, I get to do crazy.
Arcanist has the power of just being a creature that if it gets to swing, it's amazing. It doesn't even have to connect while being a 2-drop. Like a lot of the cards that have these decks are have to be 3-drops or 4-drops. The power in this card is in being a 2-drop.
Yeah. Yeah, when they, I don't know what they were thinking when they printed this with how efficient everything is in Magic nowadays.
Yeah.
But, and like, there's a lot of games where you're like, I think the best sequence I had was like turn one, you know, discard your removal, turn two Arcanist, it survives. I go turn three, like Waste Not plus Burning Inquiry, attack with Dreadhorde Arcanist, flashback Burning Inquiry. You just create so much value off Waste Not then. You might have drawn like 3-4 more cards, make 3 zombies, whatever, this, that, and the other. The upside of it is huge, I think, not to include in the deck. It kind of gives like, and plus like, it eats a removal spell on site, which again is another removal spell not pointed out, like Shieldred or something. Like, you don't need Arcanist to win. It's just, look at it like Snapcaster Mage type of thing, where it's just like super good value if it, you know, does its thing. Obviously, Snapcaster doesn't have it to attack, but, you know, Arcanist still super strong if you can protect it or leave it unchecked for a bit.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going Arcanist into this card has to be perfect. Like, discard turn one, turn two Arcanist, turn three, opponent's blocker, attack with Arcanist, get another discard spell or another removal for a second blocker. It's an insane amount of value that forces your opponent into a good top deck.
Yeah, plus, you know, I don't know, it can't be Renin 6 pinged, which is like, anytime I look at a card, I'm like, well, this card loses to Renin 6. Is it that good? Because Renin 6 played in like every deck nowadays. So it's a good card. It's a fun card. It's probably another card that may be underexplored currently in Modern, as, you know, there's good, you know, one mana spells that can still be recurred and all that. I'll keep messing with it maybe in other shells. But in that shell, I really like it. And I think it's a fun deck if you like those like black red type of decks, that this one has a bit more flavor to it than the typical, you know, black red shells.
All right, perfect. That seems like a super fun one. I think my only problem is Burning Inquiry being a bit of a dead card without Waste Not or Shieldred. Like, in this type of decks, you tend to need every top deck to be good.
Yeah, there's no, like, Hollow One. Or like, I had, like, a one of Kroxa, so if I discarded it, or, like, a Squee, the new Squee, which I could see playing. Like, maybe you cut a Shieldred down the two, and you play, like, a Squee or a Kroxa. Like, I could see that. But, yeah, I mean, like, super high variance. It's, I think, the Martyr, out of the two so far, the Martyr deck is probably the most competitive, but the...
Okay.
Shieldred, you know, Waste Not deck is the more fun.
The most fun.
Yeah.
It's just super fun. Like, whenever you can go turn two Waste Not...
Yeah,
imagine the curve of turn two, Dreadhorde Arcanist, turn three, Waste Not, cast Inquiry, attack, cast Inquiry.
Yeah. It goes super off. It's super fun when that happens, and it does every once in a while. So if you like that style deck, I recommend giving it a run. Who knows? Maybe you could run super hot with it, because, like, you know, if your variance is good with Burning Inquiry, or you run into the right, like, you know, matchups, there's a chance that, like, you can do pretty well with it.
All the lists we're mentioning today, these two and then two come, are going to be present in the Notion, in the drive views that all our patrons get access to every week. So you're going to find the 75 of every single deck list we're talking about with, if you ever need to try one of them.
Just be responsible when you try them. Don't start messaging me about how bad they are. They'll all go smoothly as according to plan. But the last one, which is a list that I've sent more, I don't know, like since last year, like this Esper Vile type list. I 5-0'd with it like last year before Modern Horizons 2, playing, you know, the...
Wasn't it a lot closer than that?
I'm
think
not
we 5-0 sure. That 5-0 was after.
It was definitely, I wasn't playing Solitudes, so it was like pre-MH2. I don't think I was even playing a Memory? I would have to look. But it's basically a super synergy deck. Yeah, I 5-0'd with it 2021.
Yeah, I was getting confused with the other processor deck list.
Oh, yeah. So what this deck, if for those of you who are not familiar, Esper Vile is a deck in Legacy that plays like a very grindy, you know, creature-based Aether Vial deck with like some really strong synergies and tutor effects and all that stuff.
It's my dream deck. So the deck plays, I'm going to short resume, it plays the 4 Recruiter of the Guard that get access to cards like Spellseeker that can get you Unearth, Ephemerate, or Brainstorm. It can get you Peacekeeper, so opponent cannot attack. It can get you, of course, stuff like Baleful Strix, just grindy. Soul Herder, Venser, Palace Shaler, Sky Cleaver, a minion creature, so it gets you not only a creature toolbox, but also an instant or sorcery toolbox, because you can ward, you can recruiter for Spellseeker for Ephemerate, so you can blink again your Recruiter of the Guard into Palace Shaler and just get the Monarchy. It has some really insane lines.
I always liked that strategy and you know, the deck and Legacy. So a while ago I tried to, you know, build it Modern, had some success with it. Then I, you know, I've come back to it. I keep coming back to it every once in a while because I love, you know, the spice I kind of added to it was, you know, there's not many good, like Legacy is a lot different than Modern where, you know, you want to close the game with creatures. Legacy, you just drown them out in card advantage and you're just like, oh, okay. Like you've cast Brainstorm 3 times and you have 8 cards in your hand, you know, something like that. For Modern, it's not about that as much. So I needed a faster way to close the game. And that of choice for me was Valky. Combined with Release to the Wind. So if you play a Valky, it comes into play, you do its thing where you exile a creature, you can Release to the Wind to exile Valky, and then you can recast it from the Tybalt side. So potentially you can go, you know, turn 2 Valky, turn 3 Release to the Wind. You have a, you know, Tybalt on turn 3, which last time I checked is still pretty hard to beat for most decks. You can get a little tricky with it if you have Vile, so you can like hold up mana, you know, they tap out, you Vile it in, and then you, you know, release it so you can get around counterspells, you know, maybe. So that's like the one main combo that you're trying to do. It's obviously not needed, but because Valky, you know, the front side of it, when it exiles, it plays really well with the 4 of Wasteland Stranglers. So you can go like turn 2 Valky, pick a creature from their hand, turn 3 Strangle, kill something, exile the creature that was under Valky.
The front side of Valky tends to be completely underestimated against aggressive decks.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a trip. It's a bad card. Like, it's a bad Dichotomous Color. Sure. But it isn't completely unplayable. No,
having information, like, being able to look at their hand is super valuable, especially when you're playing, like, a weird grindy deck that you want to try to sequence your spells correctly. So if you see that, like, oh, the coast is clear, a lot of times, like, you play Valky and you're like, okay, I can make a Tybalt here, but is the coast clear? And you see it's not, you're like, okay, maybe they'll kill it in response. I can try to flip it, something like that. So you play this weird game within a game when you play Valky, I found. But you do like you do play the Strangler, the Wasteland Stranglers, which is an Eldrazi processor, which I'm a big fan of, to kind of, you know, as a combo plan B with Valky to get some, you know, advantage from it. The rest of the shell is somewhat similar going on. We're playing 4 Tide Hollows, so another, you know, great
good
card.
Valky. Yeah, good front side good of Valky.
Great with Ephemerate, which you're playing 4 of already. Great with Vile, so you can Vile it in on their draw step. So like that, Valky and Wasteland Stranger, that's like a 1-2 punch right there. We're playing 4 Wall of Omens. Super good against aggro, one of Mord's favorite cards, I know. And then kind of where I've made some changes to it is I'm playing 3 Aether Channeler.
You're playing a lot more blue than you used to.
Yes. Before it was like a primarily black-white deck, splash blue for like release. But now I'm playing 3 Aether Channelers, which I found to be pretty, obviously super, super good. Like as like a tempo card, it does a lot. Like worst case, you get to draw a card or make a 1-1 or like maybe you need to bounce something. But like with Ephemerate, it's super, super strong. Combine that with Vile so you can have the mana to like Vile it in, Ephemerate the same turn, bounce 2 things or draw 2 cards or something like that. Like, that's been pretty good. And then one, obviously, we're playing 4 Solitude because we're a white deck that plays Ephemerate. So we have game against, like, Murktai to get rid of it. And then one, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Artai Resurrected.
I say Ertai, but that's Ertai. Spanish yeah, it's, me. But that's a Spanish me. Like, that's the Spanish pronunciation.
No, I could be saying it wrong as well. But I've been super impressed with this card. I don't think it should be played more than, like, a 1 or 2 of in some decks and that it makes sense to play it in. But yeah, they get to draw a card when you counter or stifle something, but like with Ephemerate, like, I'd much rather kill a Renin 6 and they can have a random card than leave a Renin 6 on the table, or it's a fairy or something like that. Plus, like, the Stifle ability is super, super good against some decks.
In the Micromancer, I have been loving Erdtai. Also, as we speak, also Goldfish is playing Micromancer, so the decklist is slowly popping off.
Yeah,
In that decklist, it was amazing as a Stifle effect that's not pretty easy to come by because of stuff like 13 Mana Emrakul and a lot of Haymakers that just stifling them is enough.
Stifle effect with a body, you know.
A 3-2 body is nothing to laugh at. Like, I got a few wins. I just, like, countering a card against Tron and just having a 3-2 that could
and Ephemerate. Just attacking, or, yeah, just being able to hold up Ephemerate knowing, like, okay, I'm safe here because I can Ephemerate counter anything they play. Yeah, they might draw
something.
And I'm
hitting you for 3 as well.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. And then, like, spells, like I said, we're playing 4 Ephemerate, 4 Release as the kind of, and plus, don't underestimate Release to the Wind, exiling, you know, your own Solitude and then recasting it for free, or your Wasteland Stranglers or your Aether Channelers. Just like, you can, it's not just for Tybalt or Valky. Like, it's really, it's obviously the main plan, but don't underestimate it using on a Solitude, an Erdtai, a Wasteland Strangler. Like, all of your stuff is really good with it. And then we're playing 4 Vials because this is a great Vial deck, playing, you know, 12-2 drops, 7-3 drops. So, like, Vial on 2 and 3 is always going to be super, super good. Cyborg cards, it's just basically a lot more like good hate bear creatures. 1 Containment Priest, a Kataki, 2 Lavinia. For those of you who don't know, 2 Leonin Relic Warder, which is like a kind of like a blast from the past type card, which not a lot of people play anymore. It's a 2 mana for 2 white, 2/2. When it enters a battlefield, you may exile target artifact or enchantment. So it's Tide Hollow, it has the Tide Hollow text box where it's split in half. Because when it leaves the battlefield, they get it back. So if you play it and then Ephemerate it in response to the trigger, you essentially get to take one of their things, exile it permanently, and then take another thing, which
it's also worth mentioning that Release to the Wind, besides comboing with Valky, is also really bad Ephemerate when you need it.
Yes. It's also can used on their stuff as well. And I can't tell you how many times, it's got to be over a dozen times, where I've released to the Wind, like, their Murktide and their combat step, and they just don't recast it. Like, they think it's permanently exiled or something. Like, they didn't read the card, and it's just, and I'm like, oh, mom, like, okay, I'm like, sure.
Also, or also, instead of releasing to the Wind a creature of them, and then in your
strangling
turn,
it,
strangling it with the Strangler. So, Release to the Wind works mostly as a combo with Valky, but it's also a bad Ephemerate, a bad way to get rid of a creature for a turn. Like, opponent goes get a Titan, they give it haste. Maybe all you need is the extra turn. You don't care if they have it again in the second main. Maybe all you need is not getting hit for 16.
So, yeah, it goes well. Ephemerate and that go well with Relic Warder. 2 Meddling Mage. Again, good versus combo and all that stuff. 2 Rest in Peace. 2 Sanctifiers. 1 Ashiok Dream Render. Again, mainly there for the Titan matchup. And then 1 Kaya, which I'm always super high on the play Kaya. So, yeah, it's a super grindy deck. It doesn't close the game super fast, but it has a, like, in testing and from playing the deck a decent amount, if you expect like a lot of Hammer and those style of decks, like, you know, I like all the games in Hammer I played, like, it just ends with like me having to Solituded like 60 times. And, you know, you just get, like, if you get an early Valky that they can't pressure and that you can like protect with Wall of Omens and Aether Channelers and stuff, like, it's hard for them to beat that. And you start playing Mirrors of Sagas and all that stuff. So I would say it probably could still use some tweaking. Maybe the numbers are wrong. But overall, super, super fun deck. I love Valky. Obviously, I didn't play it when everybody was cascading into it because that's not fun for me.
That's not the fun Valky. That's the good Valky.
Yeah, but like nobody expects, you know, release
the Valky
Inquisition. Yeah, no, it's just nobody really sees it coming. So it's another deck that I think it's similar to the Martyr list in terms of like how it plays, like the grindy, like there's a lot of decisions with it and all that stuff, but you know, definitely a little bit more off the wall spicy than, you know, because Martyr is more of a known commodity than whatever this pile is.
Oh yeah, this is a weird beautiful pile based on extremely powerful synergies with no way to look for them. When you look at this deck, you feel as if you are looking at the Taxes decklist, right? You have the Leonis, you have the Talia. Everything looks perfect, but nothing works with each other unless you draw the specific combos.
Yeah, everything like by themselves is not super powerful. Like Tide Hollow, just playing Tide Hollow by itself, like that's a pretty poor discard effect. Even it's a, I know it's a creature, but like, but when you combine that with Ephemerate, with Strangler, you know, and so on and so forth, then it becomes like, oh, this is like much better than just like a discard effect. This is like double discard or whatever, and you know, stuff like that. So when you got the right pieces, when the deck is clicking and all that stuff, it feels super, super good. And probably like the reason I'm excited for Aether Channeler, outside of Wall of Omens, it lacked card advantage. And this is just like another way to like kind of gain some of that. Plus you can return your own thing with Channeler, which like has come up a couple times. Like I've vialed it in to protect something or whatever. I don't know. I think the card's super, super cool in this style. And I am playing a Modern Horizons 2 card. I'm playing Solitude, so.
See? Only like, because it's perfect for the combo.
Well, I remember when I was talking to you about the list, like when Solitudes and Griefs were legal, and you're like, why aren't you playing Solitude? I'm like, because I don't want to. And then I kept trying to play with the deck, and it just wasn't as good without Solitude. So I made the concession, and I'm like, I guess I can register a number of Modern Horizons 2 cards and play Solitude to make Mord happy. Because that's what I'm here to do, is to make Mord happy. That is my goal. But like those three, I mean, like if you asked me to rank them,
what would be the most competitive one?
I would say like Martyr from testing so far. I've done the most testing with Martyr, but like it just feels like super, super. Like I don't think I've lost a match 0-2 yet. I think no, I lost the Scapeshift 0-2.
Scapeshift seems unplay. I have played a lot of that sort of deck, and Scapeshift is just unwinnable.
But like I haven't. I'm 6-1 against Murktide. I'm 3-1 against Shadow. I'm 3-1 against Hammer. 1-2 against Creativity, and everything else has been pretty good. Like Merfolk, I'm undefeated against. So I think that, like, I think that deck has like real legs for sure. If you can kind of, if you're taking it to a tournament, you know what kind of meta to expect. Also, if you lose to Burn with that deck, you should probably never play again, because Burn should never beat Martyr. So if there's a lot of Burn in your like local meta and stuff like that, and you just want to crush, like, go mulligan to a Martyr of Sands and make your burn opponent cry.
Remember that, everybody. Try the mono white deck, of course. You're Urinize all the decks, of course.
Well, no, not that.
No, that's what the ant said. He said, you're Urinize all the decks. That's,
if somebody I hear that as a quote. If people start tagging me on Twitter saying, like, I played your list, I'd be like, oh my god, so cool. And then they'd say, like, I put Yorion in it. I think I'd probably, like, block the tweet from appearing on my page.
Just be like, no. Like this is not what I wanted. No,
just play normal 60 card Magic and make me happy. That's what you should aspire to be.
Why must people be like this?
You know, and I always joke with more. You know, obviously Yorion is a super, super powerful card. If you,
yeah, it's a soft dance.
There's a lot of decks out there that like are just better as Yorion piles. You know, Martyr, could it be maybe? I'm not sure. I refuse to test it to know that. I'll leave that to like Mord and friends and you guys. I just, you know, because I look at decks like when I build them, it's like, could I build this in paper? Would I enjoy it? And I would never build a Yorion deck in paper, because if I have to shuffle that thing, I think I'm going to throw it across the room.
Yeah, I think there's like the Martyr Grind combo, you can't just, like, even if I meme about it, I can't like Yorionize it, because it depends a lot of the synergy between like two cards that it really relies on.
Yeah.
Like Serra, Sen, and plus Martyr. You sort of need a lot of the cards need to be together.
Yes.
If not, you just are in a really bad spot. On the contrary, something like what happened with Micromancer, if you are playing so many tutors, you can just do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, I think Micromancer, when I was playing it, Oh, the question that reminds you, the question I had for you about...
Okay, let me introduce the deck first, and okay, then we go through that. So the final rule, which is the one we're going to discuss, is the one I started, the one posted by Xeno1, like 6 days ago. He posted 60 card deck list, Micromancer combo with Thassa's Oracle's Poison Revolt and such, alongside Step Through. I fell in love with the deck list. Of course, I immediately Yorionized it. And now I'm just running it every single time. Got a fast 5-0 with the Esper version, now trying a Sky version based on the power synergies between Micromancer and Ephemerate. So it has been really good.
Yeah, well, the list was super unique. It was probably one of the more unique brews that have popped up in a while, which is always great to see. So I tested it, and it was a lot of fun. I think I went 4-1 my first league. I haven't really touched too much of it since. But the question I had for, you know, you, Mord, somebody who's played it a bunch, Yorionized it especially, and just from the last list I've seen you play, it seems like Aether Channeler should be in there as at least a one of value target.
I did consider it. The biggest problem with Aether Channeler is when are you... So this is a principle. This is a principle of brewing we both know quite well, which is when do we want a specific card in our deck list? So looking at the Micromancer deck list, like we both know when we're playing a toolbox deck, you only add a card that's part of the toolbox if we think we're gonna look for it, because why not just play a better Steedrop if we don't think of toolboxing for it, right? And in what scenarios would you like step through for Ether Channeler is my bigger question.
I don't know if it's as much about like, because step three, you're always like, Ether Channeler is clearly not as good as Airtime, Micromancer, so on and so forth. Like, I don't think it should ever be like the first thing you should step through for. But it being like, I think the bounce could be super good in that. And like, I'm not saying like play four of, but I think you could probably play like,
It's a one-off, of course.
One Aether Channeler instead of like the fourth Wall of Omens or something like that, because like it does the same thing as Wall in terms of draw. And maybe not Wall is the best cut, because Wall's super good when you're trying to survive to the long game.
Yeah, Wall has been insane in this deck.
Worst case scenario, like maybe you're like, maybe I do need the tutor for this, because you know I want to go cycle on turn two, play Aether Channeler, bounce their thing on turn three, like a saga or something like that. Because you already have a Micromancer in hand or something. I didn't really think about it in terms of like, you know, it's clearly not better than Micromancering or getting a, you know, something else like a Snapcaster or whatever, like if that's exactly what you need at that time. But like drawing it as a one of will probably never feel bad is what like kind of my thought was, especially in a Yorion deck that can probably afford to play like a one of that's just like, it's not a bad card. It's not going to be a super great card, but it's always going to be a card that like you never probably mind casting as long as you're not trying to hold up like Counterspell or something.
Yeah.
Also, you can, you know, if you for some reason you don't have Ephemerate, you can always just, you know, bounce your own Micromancer back to your hand, even though that's pretty poor. It's something you could do. and all that stuff. The one thing I'm really glad people started doing, and it's something I will actually take credit for this, is play Magus of the Moat in the sideboard. Yeah, I remember when Dingo, young Dingo, was streaming, somebody sent him the list to stream it, and I'm like, you got to play Magus of the Moat in your sideboard. And the first game, he played against Elves. And I'm like, Elves can't beat Magus of the Moat. You know, like, they're not going to bring in Dismembers.
Oh, you said Moat. I was thinking of, I heard Moon.
No, Magus of the Moat. I know you're playing Magus of the Moon in your main board, but Magus... Yeah,
I consider the Mouse of the Moat. My problem with Mouse of the Moat is it being an 0-3 instead of like Mouse of the Tabernacle, which is a 2-6.
You're not bringing in Magus of the Moat against Bolt decks anyway. You're bringing in Magus of the Moat against Merfolk, who maybe board in, like, they probably board out their Dismembers versus you, because they're probably bringing in like Subtleties and stuff like that and then Forces instead of Dismembers. It's just like it can buy you so much time if they don't have the Dismember. It also like Elves can't beat it that I found. Hammer can't beat it outside of a Ornithopter like flashing in a hammer or Ink Moth, which you should be able to deal with and stuff like that. Like I can't tell you when I was playing the deck at least how many times I'm like, thank God I put this in my sideboard and they like nobody saw it coming against those strategies. Obviously, like it's trash against you know, don't bring it against Murktide and hoping to buy you time. Or like any, you know, any deck like that. Or like, so I think it should be played in the sideboard. I would stand by that. I would fight.
Okay, I can get behind that. I'm going to try it in my next one. I didn't consider how good it could be against a lot of non-meta decks. Like, sometimes when I sideboard, I just consider the first tier of decks, and then I disregard the thing that, yeah, this just wins you the game against Merfolk, it just wins you the game against Elves, it just likely wins you the game against something like Amulet, at least while being slit, right? Really annoying. It's actually something that should at least be taken a look. Against Footfalls is amazing. It's really easy to kill, but...
Yeah, it's super fragile, but, like, you're not bringing it in against those decks that are, you know, even Shadow. Like, any deck that's playing removal spells, you're not bringing it in because it's going to eat a removal. They're going to attack you anyway. You're bringing it in against, like, the decks that, like, you know, they might have, like, two or three removal spells in their whole 75. Like, Merfolk probably plays, like, four. You know, Elves might not play any, you know, those type of strategies. It can buy you time against Titan. I think it's fairly free to add in as your sideboard, and it's super strong, and plus it's just a cool card.
Yeah. But so Mouse of the Moat is the next 0-3 to add to the deck. And then we 0-3 because we play Mouse of the Moat, but who cares about that?
When you win a game with it, you gotta
screenshot. I'm sending you the screenshot.
And Twitter tag me and say thank you for this knowledge.
Yeah, of course. That's how it works.
Yeah, otherwise, the Yorion edition, I think, was right in this list. Dropping the Oracle combo, I think, was correct, just making it a pure value deck.
I really like the Oracle combo as a concept, but the more I play, the more I realized...
That's too hard.
It's impossible to get. Like, it seems really easy at first sight, but you need a Micromancer to get an Ephemerate, to get an Instant and Sorcery, and then you just step through for the...
Yeah.
So you need two step through or a Micromancer and a step through. The Micromancer to survive through an Ephemerate. And in most cases, if you have a Micromancer that survived through an Ephemerate, you just get like Thoughtseize plus new Ephemerate and win regardless, right? There's no need to just go for a combo. If you're doing the if you have like that much value, you can just win the decent way.
It was a lot of slots, and I think it's super like creative to think of that as a win condition. I just think like it was almost too hard to pull off. It was really bad against like the control decks and all that stuff because like you're not playing that much to back it up. Like I think creating like just a more value shell with Micromancer, man. If they gave a Spellseeker in Modern, oof, that'd be so cool.
This is the proof that Spellseeker will be completely broken.
Oh yeah, just a 3 mana that can do this. Yeah, it would be
three mana can get caught with Recruiter of the Guard. It can get 2 mana spell like. A big problem with this deck is you have to run like really bad cards because you can't afford to play good cards.
Yeah.
Like because you need to make some concessions. Imagine if you could just get Counterspell.
Yeah, it would just, yeah. So, but Micromancer is a really sweet card, so I'm glad to see. I'm always happy to see people playing like cards that are not the typical, oh, Renin 6. Like, I know you're playing Solitudes and Teferis, and like those are staples, and you need to play them because you're playing cards like Micromancer, like you said.
You're not playing them here because they're completely broken, but also because they work super well. The Fairy Protecting, yeah. Micromancer, Solitude with the playset of like if you're playing the full playset of Ephemerate, even if you don't like playing MH2 cards, not playing Solitude just from like a synergistic point is a mistake.
Yeah, I think the way you built it is correct, and hopefully, you know, I'm sure there's still more tweaks, and it's always going to be a deck that can be, because there's always going to be fun or good 1 mana spells printed, there's always going to be wizards printed and all that stuff. So it's a deck that can consistently evolve. So if you're looking for like a deck that can, you know, you can hold on to probably outside of like a Yorion ban, which I hope happens.
I don't think a Yorion ban happens, but every single day I grow more fond of like a triple ban of Iteration, Outburst, and Brennan 6. Just hit the 3 decks in the top just for fun. I don't think it's needed. I think the format is fine. But whenever people talk about bans, I suggest that's the only possible way out, right? Because not hitting one of those three just...
Yeah, if there is a ban, I think it's going to be like 2 or 3 cards at once. It's not going to simply be like, oh, Renin 6 is banned and stuff like that. It's going to be like Renin 6 and, you know...
Violent Outburst and maybe something like Murktide or Expressive Iteration.
Yeah, something like that. Which wouldn't kill any deck, but it would just, you know... make the decks that have those cards a lot less.
Living End would be the same deck, but in unable to play at instant speed with Force of Negation backup. 4-color will have to shift out of 4-color because losing Brennan 6 is the best green card into likely something like Azorius or Sheskai. Maybe like 4-color piles with Omnath, but a really soft green splash.
Yep.
Like, that's mostly what will happen. And regarding the Micromancer, I have never been on a deeper dive bullets to get, right? Because step through has to be one of the best tutors in Magic.
Yeah, 2 mana, find a wizard, yeah.
And Micromancer is amazing at finding what it has to find, so it's... A lot of the time you're like, okay, what's a good 1 mana spell you can add? And then you have so many.
Mm-hmm. The fact that I think the thing that appealed to me most about the deck was that it was essentially every card outside of, like, you know, the 4 of the Solitude, game. Yeah. Was just like a tutor target. Yeah, can be found off another card, whether it's Micromancer or Step Through. So like the consistency of finding those cards was always super high. It's just like, are those cards powerful enough to win you the game?
Yeah, so you have to add Solitude. So the cards that you add that have nothing to do with the Wizard Shell are Solitude because you have 4 Ephemerate. Wall of Omens because you have 4 Ephemerates. You have 4 Ephemerates due to the fact you need a lot of them with Micro, and you need to do something with them when you draw them without a Micromancer, right?
Yeah.
So Solitude and Wall of Omens sort of close that gap.
Yeah, and that was kind of my point for Aether Channeler, right? Like, yeah. You know...
Being a wizard, being something
being
to
blink.
Being
a wizard, being something to blink, like having multiple options, not like, oh, I guess the worst... Like, with Wall of Omens, you're just drawing a card, which obviously is still good. But with Aether Channeler, maybe you need to bounce...
Yeah, the bounce tends like, to be double, super good.
Double bounce against something could be enough, like, for you to...
I'm adding one and see how it goes. Only in one scenario have been wanting to get it due to the bounce effect because I need to bounce a Leyline Binding for a tempo play.
Yeah.
Also, this deck is a great use of Orvar, which is the greatest deck against creativity. Because for anybody that doesn't realize, for anybody that didn't read Orvar, the second line of text. So this is the only deck I have ever seen that can actually exploit both parts about Orvar.
Yeah.
You have it as a sideboard bullet against discard decks where you just step through for it when you need it, opponent discards your hand, and you just get to copy a permanent. Against creativity, when they make you discard your Orvar, you copy an Archon and you kill their Archon with your own Archon, and then you attack and you just get super ahead.
Yeah.
But in this deck, it's also a win con, because if you hard cast Orvar and then you ephemerate a Micromancer, you get two Micromancers.
Yep. Yeah, so
and then you just start scalating out of control.
I built a 60-card version of the Wizards deck. I basically dropped the Oracle combo. I actually cut the Teferis, which I'm still not sure is right, for 4 Aether Channelers to have more ephemerate targets, which I'm not saying...
Without Wall of Foments, you might need to. Like, Wall of Foments has been pretty good at just
my hand. I think like the reason I went for Channeler over... I was trying to just see how Channeler was, so I just added it in, like, at the 60. It was pretty good against, like, the creature permanent-based matchups. It was obviously, like, pretty, you know, medium against, like, the matchups that didn't care that, you know, the bounce effect of the 1-1 bird and all you were doing is drawing a card. Then it was just Wall of Omens that could attack for two, for 3 mana. So it was, like, it was okay. I think, you know, playing the deck, it's just much better as a Yorion deck, which, you know, if that's your style like it is Mords, then it's something that I would definitely consider as well as a fun deck to, you know, that can always be evolving, which is, I think, like, the best thing about when you build a deck is like, can this deck always be improved? If yes, like, this is going to be
it's not something like Slivers where you know that you have been capped like 90% of the time. Yeah. This one, any wizard, any one drop, any... Then you have a lot of weird cards, like the Blue March is something that we have considered a while.
Mm-hmm.
Kaya came with the perfect piece of tech that I had never heard about but has been insane, which is Epiphany of the Drowniard.
I don't even remember what that
is. One blue and X, a new factor fiction for X plus one.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So when you know your Micromancer is going to die, you just Micromancer for it, and you go, like, instead of your opponent, this for 6, look at 7 cards, and you make, and it's, like, it's going to draw you 3 cards.
Yeah, that's pretty strong.
And then you have the fake wizards, like Crypt Swap, Orvar, and the one that got me the latest 5-0, what's the name of, the 3 mana instant that everybody was, laughed about.
Nimble Obstructionist?
No, the Changeling Counterspell.
Oh, yeah, I know what the card is. I think I saw you actually tweet that or something.
The perfect meme. But yeah, deck is super interesting for anybody that wants to try it. We have been working on it, like, we're slowly trying to find the perfect version if it's Jeskai or Esper. But I seriously recommend everybody that likes these sort of toolbox strategies. This is the best toolbox I have found.
Yeah, it's a control toolbox, not to be, you know, it's not a it's more so like a controlling style toolbox, outside of, like, I would say it's more controlling than creature, even though it does play creatures. The overall deck is a control deck trying to grind you out with these.
A lot of people, like, when Safranali was playing it, were asking, how does this win? Like, what's the plan? Like, do you have... And their soft answer is, you get a lot of value and you hit them with a 3-3.
Yeah, I mean, when I was playing the deck, it's in its first draft with the Oracle combo, I think I won 3 out of 4 matches with beating down with Micromancers and Solitudes, and then I won 1 with the Oracle combo. So yeah, it's surprising how many times, like, you just... grind them with stuff, and then you, like, slam a Micromancer, and you're just like, woo, I'm going to beat you down with this.
Exactly. Also, a lot of the time, you just get the step through Micromancer, Ephemerate, Counterspell, Lock, and you just lock your opponent with Counterspell, or with a Teferi, you just lock them with Thoughtseize. It's something that happens super consistently, and it's worth just knowing that you have a few locks in your deck that it's good to go for. Whenever you get... it's really sad that the best... Archaeomancer effect is worth 4 mana. Like, we have Eternal Witness for 3, that's, like, almost strictly better.
Yeah, it's a shame Eternal Witness isn't a wizard. Otherwise, you could play, like, a green splash for Traverse to find your Micromancer.
That was one of the considerations, but not worth it with it being a shaman. But the fact we don't have a 3 mana, like, 2-1 or 1-1 that gets you back an instant or sorcery is insane.
I wouldn't be surprised if that gets printed in the future, because, like, 4 mana is a lot. I think they'd because it's, like, a common effect, and it's, like, a fun effect for limited, so I could see it being... You know,
have to be sure that you don't have a good, pretty good blink effects. Like, as long as you make sure it's not super blinkable, it's super easy to print.
Yeah. So, but overall, really cool deck. Something I'd probably come back to again as well, and see if I can still make it competitive in a non-Yorion way.
In an un-Yorionized version.
Yeah, and I play bad. Yeah, the I play bad deck special.
Grab a good 80 cards. Why not make it 60?
Yeah,
exactly. And then we have the Mord special. Tell me about 60. Why not make it 80?
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes we get lucky and it works. Like, on this case, I really think the 80 is better just because of how it unclanks your deck. It allows you to fit all the bad cards while allowing you to have a super... Rather, your situational cards while having a higher percentage of powerful cards.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, again, if you're a toolbox aficionado, and it's definitely a deck with a zillion decisions. Pick it up, try it out, rent it, do whatever you want.
We have the false one mana instant subspace in the form of Surgical and Gutshot.
Yes. I think it's a really very innovative deck that I think will keep being explored by like other brewers like Mord. I could see like a Spike picking it up soon and trying some Micromancer stuff now that people have popped off with it and all that. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised in the next month or so if you saw a couple more different iterations with maybe the same strategies overall, but the same, you know, step through Micromancer shenanigans, you know, together.
Finally, Step Through is an uncastable card because it bounces two. The fact it bounces two creatures and not up to two creatures almost cost me a game once.
Or did you cast it and you had only...
I had to cast it more than once. Incredibly, I know.
Well, you don't want to step through your own Snapcaster Mage back to your hand?
That's exactly... No, my opponent had a Wurmcoil and I had to bounce it. And I wanted to swing for lethal. And and it was like, I just want to bounce that Wurmcoil. And I had to like bounce something I couldn't play, and I got lucky to find lethal.
Especially for a newer card, right? Like in a card that's new, you would expect it to say up to two, but it's pretty specific, just return two.
Because why would you make this card almost playable? And with that being said, that's enough for us today. Hope you enjoyed our go around through a number of rules, from Mono White to Rakdos to Esper to Esper / Zeskai. We had a really, really they focus on white. There's like 12 ephemerates.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of ephemerating and a lot of solitude and going around in these brews.
And then we just have Rakdos being Rakdos, because why not? I think that one might be the most fun in a chaotic way. Like, take two LGS and just start waste loading stuff. The most fun.
Yeah, if you want to catch some people and make some... Like, I get like a good feeling of when I'm playing a deck and I know I'm playing some off the wall deck in paper that like people are watching and they're walking by like, what the hell is going on here? And like, that's what you get, you know. That's, you may not get the most wins,
but you're gonna get the most fun.
Yeah, you get the most fun. You get the people saying like, whoa, like what the hell is he bringing to this party?
And then you have the opposite on Mardi Grind, just seeing everybody look at you like, can you please stop looking that Kami? And you're like, no, yeah, I'm going to find a 3-3 to kill you
eventually. I've had like some salty people in Moto this week, like with the Kami loop, like saying like, that's so fun. And I'm like, sorry, I'm not dashing a Ragavan every turn. Like, oh man, I'm shaking in my boots over here.
Yeah, like, I'm super sorry. Like, I have to play this tier 4 deck while you cast a Murktide. What could I do?
Yeah, I'm like, sorry, this common from Kamigawa's beating you.
Is this a common? I can't believe it's a common.
Great card. Should be a...
The White Spore Frog.
Should be a mythic.
Should be a mythic. White Spore Frog should be its name.
I wish Spore Frog, like, I wish, like, that art was white so I could play because I like that art better, but...
Spore Frog is a lot more fun for some reason. Like, I look at Spore Frog and I'm like, oh, the Spore, and I look at that Kami and I'm like, ugh, the Kami.
Yeah, it's a frog. What's not to love?
So, yeah. Thanks so much, everybody. Hope you have a nice night. Thanks so much, and for joining me as well.
Thanks for having me. I'll hope to talk to some people about these brews. If anybody tries them out, please, you know, I'm in the Faithless Brewing Discord. You can message me. I'm always, or if you have crazy card ideas, especially for Modern or Legacy, I will probably get in the Pioneer at some point, but especially Modern or Legacy that you're like, hey, like, I was thinking about this card. Like, if you can ask Mord, I probably send him like 75 deck lists a week about like, hey, what do we think of this? What do we think of this? So,
oh yeah, if anybody wants to hear like,
half the ramblings baked, of a madman.
Half-baked deck ideas, let me know, and I can just send you SPMs as soon as they get to me. And if you think any of the fields is crazy, you have no idea what goes through this mind's head, through this guy's head half of the time. These are like the ideas that have been finely tuned.
Yep, yeah. After 6 or 7 leagues of it, they get tuned. But yeah, so thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming. You know, I just love talking to you about random brews. So, thank you so much, everybody. Hope you liked the episode, and see you again on Monday. Have a nice night. If you enjoyed this episode and want to know more about our latest brews, you can support us via Patreon, which will not only grant you immediate access to our Discord, where you can find our famous brewers alongside an army of mind-like players, but also access to the monthly project voting, where you can help us decide what to play with for the following month. Finally, remember to tune in on Monday as David returns from his climbing trip, and we can go look deep into one of the finest brews in Pioneer. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and have a nice night. Happy brewing!